Sullivan, the first mate, was a youngish, hard-cased sailor with a slantendicular way of looking at you. After we had filed out of Mrs. Spring's presence, he turned to me.
"He's mad. So's she. It don't matter, though. Sane or silly, drunk or dry, he's the best stand skipper on the coast. You follow me?"
I nodded.
"Well and good," says he.
"You'll be Mr. Comber's watch. Just keep your eyes open, and when the skipper starts talking Latin, just shut up. Do you hear?" That was one piece of advice I didn't need. So we ran south, then south by east, and the weather got warmer, and one morning the wind had a new smell. A heavy, rotten air that comes from centuries of mangrove growing and decaying. And that afternoon we sighted the low green bank far away to port that is the coast of Africa. We sighted sails, too, but never for long. The Balliol College, as Kirk told me, drew wind like no other ship. And the best fun was to stand up in her forechains as she lay over, one gunwale just above the crests, thrashing along like Billy be damned, with mountains of canvas billowing above you. That land we'd sighted was the Guinea coast, which was played out for slaving. The growing sentiment for abolition at home, the increasing number of nations who joined with England in fighting the trade, the close blockade of the coast by British and Yankee patrol ships who burned the slave stations and pounced on the ships, all these things were making life more difficult in the blackbird trade in the 40s. In the old days, the slavers had been able to put in openly and pick up their cargoes, which had been collected by the native chiefs in the great pens or barracoons at the river mouths. Now, speed and secrecy were the thing, and of course, chiefs to deal with. Your slaver might easily dodge the patrols, but unless he had a good agent ashore and a native king who could keep up a supply of prime nigs, he was sunk. It's always amused me to listen to the psalm-smiting hypocrisy of nigger lovers at home and in the States who talk about white savages raping the coast and carrying poor black innocents into bondage. Why, without the help of the blacks themselves, we'd not have been able to lift a single slave out of Africa. But it's all by the way. The main thing is that Spring had a good black king to work with, a horrible old creature named Gizo, who lorded it over the black country of Dahomey. After our first landfall, we bore away south and came eastabout to Cape Palmas, and so along the Ivory Coast and Gold Coast to Whydah, where we put into the open roads. Spring had the stars and stripes at the masthead and was safe enough, but there wasn't a Yankee in port. There were two British naval sloops, but they wouldn't come near us. This was where the slavers scored, Kirk told me. The Yanks wouldn't let any but their own navy search an American ship. We lay off, looking at the long yellow beach with the factories and barracoons behind it and the huge rollers crashing on the sand, and it was as hot as hell's kitchen.